Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Keely Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Classic City Sports Podcast. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams here for you. It's the off season, so its content is you know, it's hard to come by sometimes. But guess what? The AJC has given us some more stuff to talk about. Even though I'm kind of tired of reading about it and seeing about it too much, something we do have to talk about for at least a couple of minutes on the show today. And then we've got Hot or Not. We're going to be talking about SEC teams that we believe in and SEC teams that we do not believe in this year. Or I don't know if it's just SEC. Jonathan didn't necessarily tell me it's strictly SEC, but I'm going to go with SEC when I look at it myself
you
personally.
See how in the title it says SEC football, who's hot and who's
we're,
not?
We're going to – I prepared for it to be SEC football teams, so I did go with that. And then Jonathan decided to spring on me right before we came on the show by tweeting that we are doing King of the Hill tonight as well. So that's always a fun topic for us, and I know a lot of people that watch do enjoy that as well, so I'm excited about that as well. Jonathan, how are we feeling this afternoon?
Oh, I'm good, and no spoilers, no hints for King of the Hill, because when I was posed this question, I kind of fought myself with it for a little bit, and I kind of went back and forth, and so I didn't want you to have any time to think about it, because now that I've thought about it for a couple of hours, I know my stance, and now that I've analyzed the question, I've really dug deep about it, I know my answer. But I kind of want to see your raw reaction to this, see how you tackle it, and see how you analyze it. Because I think it's a really fair question. And on the surface, you kind of think it's really easy to answer. But when you kind of start digging into things, I think it becomes a little bit more tricky. And you're kind of like, oh, well, when you think of it that way, perhaps you could. And yeah, so it's just something different. I don't know. It was like a last minute addition for myself. And I thought it'd be a good conversation because we haven't done King of the Hill or really talking season much. This offseason, mostly because even though you just said that we've been short on content, we've been able to figure out a bunch of content without having to tap into King of the Hill or talking season. That's a good thing. That means we get a lot of good stuff to talk about, like we do this episode. And of course, next week with SEC Media Days, that's going to give us a bunch more content to talk about, hopefully enough to where we can bridge that to the start of the season. Because, you know, SEC Media Days roll around and it's like, dang, we got like a month left until college football is back. So a lot of excitement.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about SEC Media Day. We'll kind of talk about that for a second probably as well on the show. And shoot, if we wanted to bring back a talking season, all we got to do is just start talking about Ohio State fans today because they have been all over it because of the comments by Ryan Day, which granted, if you watched Brooks Austin's show last night or paid attention to the actual interview, he was kind of pried at to make any type of statement about like targeting and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was he made him give him an answer about targeting on there, but we're not going to talk about that specifically tonight. But if we wanted to, that could be talking season, because those Ohio State fans have been putting that video out and talking about the fact that that's not targeting, all that kind of stuff for a hot minute now. But let's jump into the main topic of tonight, or not the main topic, as you can see the title, the main topic's that one. But I think one of the pressing topics is the whole AJC issue with UGA. Georgia obviously came out with a 9-page, 4,200-word, you know, statement to them, demanding that they recant that story, that they retract it rather. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because later in the day, Alan Judd decided to release an article himself that just was like, UGA and Kirby Smart not happy with the way things have been reported. It's just kind of in poor taste when you see that article come out the same day that they sent a letter to your publishing site saying that you need to recant something. And instead of recanting it, you kind of just posted something new.
Yeah. And you know, we haven't talked about this really at all on our podcast. And I think it's not. Mostly because, like I said, we've had a lot of content to cover and I think good content. And I'd rather talk about those things than talk about what the AJC has been doing and more specifically what Alan Judd has been choosing to report. And so, but at this point, it's like you have to. Now that the university is involved, they have inserted themselves officially in this conversation because it eventually got to the point where it's like, we can no longer just sit back and watch this unfold. We have to do something about this, especially because of the last article and that he wrote about Jamal Jarrett. And that's one the University of Georgia specifically highlighted in their statement was that recent article that he wrote about Jamal Jarrett. And then, of course, that went on to unfold into On3 releasing their version of just the straight police report. And that didn't really match up with what Alan Judd was reporting as an investigative journalist, as what he has titled himself and what his role is supposed to be at the AJC. And here's kind of my take. You know, I am a journalism student at the University of Georgia. I do take courses about ethics. I take courses about communication law. I have taken all of these courses that tells me, how am I supposed to act as a journalist? What is my duty as a journalist? And what am I supposed to do? And how am I supposed to act? Those are the things that we are basically molded into at Georgia. We are taught all of these rules, what we are supposed to do, to abide by them and to make sure that we not only pose ourselves in the best light to the public, but also making sure that we give the public, we give our readers, our viewers, the most important information and accurate information. And I think that's where the AJC has failed. I think that's where Alan Judd has failed. And you saw where in the statement, if you read it, the University of Georgia in their statement highlighted how on AJC's website, they have all of these like ethics and these cornerstone values that they have for the website. And one of them was like credibility and making sure that they are giving you credible information. And Alan Judd did not do that. He did not live up to that statement. And I think the biggest issue that I personally have with how Alan Judd and the AJC have chose to attack this whatever vendetta that they have against Georgia. You know, the guy's written like 17 articles in the last 4 months, you know, since January, just highlighting off the field issues at Georgia, anything and everything he can find. That's what he's writing his content about. So obviously there's a strategy here that he has, and it's what he's targeting his content around. But I think for me is just that, you know, one of the biggest no-nos as a journalist, and everybody knows this, you don't even have to go to journalism school to figure this out, is that you're not supposed to insert your bias into anything that you write. Now, if you want to do an opinion piece, that's a different story. That's why you title that opinion in all caps and you let people know, this is my opinion on this subject. I'm letting you know I'm going to be giving you my personal thoughts and opinions on this. But when you're an investigative journalist like Mr. Judd, and you're trying to give out information
that's the key word.
Yeah. Investigative journalists, where your job is to give out factual information. And when you fail to do that, and you, on top of that, you insert your opinion, whether he wants to admit that or not, it was very clear in that article that he inserted his own opinion and his own feelings into that article to try and swerve it a different direction than what it really was. And that's my entire issue with it. As someone that is in journalism school, those are the things that I just kind of would like, man, you can't do that. This is not what we're supposed to do. Like, that is not your role or duty as a journalist. And you're just going against everything. But of course, in today's world in media, what are people going to do, Stoddard, when they see something like that on Twitter? What are they going to do? They're just going to read the headline.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say too. Like, two things about it. One, you call yourself an investigative journalist. When you're an investigative journalist, you are supposed to, it's not supposed to be an editorial. It's not supposed to be your opinion. It is supposed to be the facts and the facts alone. And you're not supposed to omit those facts, right? And that's one of the biggest issues that Georgia even had. If you read that whole page or the 9-page thing they post or they sent out to the AJC, was their issue in main part is, hey, I mean, you're making statements that don't match up with the police report. You're making statements that don't match up with the communication log between the accuser and Jamal Jarrett. You're literally just drawing a narrative up and you're using it as clickbait, right? And if you're going to call yourself a investigative journalist, there is no room in that article for any opinion, because when you write an article about Georgia's running backs and you want to add in, hey, this guy's great because of this, or I think I like what he does because he has this type of play style, you can happily insert your opinions in those type of things. But when you take the time to go out of your way to write an article that is about a legal action or some type of thing like that, you can no longer add your opinion. When you are considering yourself the investigative journalist, there is no room at all for an opinion. It is literally state the facts for your readers, and they need to be exactly what was said and what happened, and let them come to their conclusion about it afterwards. Not by having a baiting headline that is something along the lines of Georgia rallies behind, you know, players and accepts them on the football team while accused of sexual assault. That is a baiting headline that is all about getting clicks, and they're behind a paywall. So that's what really gets you, because that's the thing that really ticks me off about it, is because they make that type of headline, right? And so your average Georgia fan that doesn't necessarily know the situation, and granted, when that article came out, you and I didn't really know the whole situation because that hasn't been talked about. This was when he was 16 years old and during, you know, when he was on campus for a visit at Georgia before he was even on the roster at Georgia. So we didn't really know the whole story there either. So what we get is an opinion piece with a baiting headline that makes you say, hey, let me pay for this article because I want to see what they're talking about. And the point that goes back to the fact that you are an accredited journalism, like, or one of the biggest in Georgia for sports, right? AJC, that is a huge name. You are literally getting, people are going to go, oh, they're going to tell me the truth. They're going to give me all the information. When in reality, they gave you clickbait. They gave you parts of the information they wanted you to hear, and they did not give you the actual transcript from the police investigation that proved that there was no wrongdoing. That's the part that ticked me off.
Yeah, I think it's about making nothing out of something, or trying to make nothing out of something. And that's why I really appreciated what Dogs HQ and the good people over at On3 did, is they were like, we have the police report. Incredible
article on that.
Jake Rowe did an incredible job with that, and I think that was it wasn't even like I'm going to call it a rebuttal. It wasn't a rebuttal. Like, that's not exactly how you should classify it, but it's kind of what it felt like. You know, the AJC released their version of it. And then Jake Rowe was like, I have the police report. How about I just give you the police report word for word, what I have on my desk right now? How about I just put that in single
opinion
for you to read for free? Anybody can click on this and read it for free. Like, so I really appreciated that. And that's why I'm just kind of like, like you said, it sucks that we have to keep talking about this, and this has continued to be such a hot topic in the news around Georgia, especially after winning back-to-back national titles. Things should be uppity up, but instead things are just kind of on a low mark, and I think people are just kind of itching for a football season to get here, as am I. I for sure am, but it'll be interesting to see where things go from here now that the university has inserted themselves and they are now taking action on this, like I said, as they should have, in my opinion. I think that it just reached a point where you can no longer sit on your hands and just act like nothing's going on. When you pose it
the way they did, it becomes defamation, right? Like, you're defaming his character as an individual he was 16 years old, right? And then now you're also defamating the name of UGA and Georgia football as a whole. Like, if they don't recant this story, I really feel like you see a defamation lawsuit coming because they decided not to recant the story that was inaccurate.
Yeah, and I think, to my knowledge, I believe how the process goes is that Alan Judd has 10 days to retract his story. And then if he doesn't after 10 days, then the university has the opportunity to proceed a lawsuit, I believe. I am no law major, but I believe that is how things are supposed to unfold, or how the timeline works. So we'll see if Mr. Judd does recant his story, or if he just keeps doubling down like he has been. But anyways, I said we were excited for the football season, so let's talk about the football season. Let's get into this grind of the upcoming SEC schedule, the upcoming 2023 season, to see if Georgia is going to three-peat as national champs, or if someone else is going to be crowned a new winner. So we are going to be doing a hot or not. We're taking a throwback to high school. You know, I think this was more of a girl thing, you know, like a hot or not list. Like, let's list all the guys that are hot and all the guys are not, whatever. It works both ways. So we're doing our own hot or not list. And so there was one rule, really, actually. There's only one rule to this. You can't pick Georgia, because everybody's hot on Georgia right now. Everybody's hot on the back-to-back national champs. And everybody, of course, is going to be hot. What if we were going to come out here and
say they weren't hot?
Yeah. Unless you want to try and make the case that you are not hot on the Bulldogs this year, Stoddard, go right ahead. And I will sit here and listen to you and then tell you why you are wrong at the end. But nonetheless, you're entitled to your own opinion on this. But so you pick one team that you're hot about, and then you pick one team that you're not so hot about this year. So Stoddard, we're going to start with you. We'll go with which team are you hot about going into 2023?
Hot about was an easy one for me because I feel like it's, you know, you kind of have an idea if somebody's good. And I don't know, this isn't a hot take when I say this. This is just a team that I do feel confident in that they're going to go out there and actually perform this year at the standard that they are supposed to be, that people expect them to do. And I think that's the LSU Tigers. I think they're going to come out there and actually be good. I think they're, you know, everybody's talking, like especially Bama fans are saying they're coming out with vengeance this year and everything. And I think that they have to deal with LSU this year. I'm not guaranteeing that LSU beats them, but I am saying that it's going to be between those two teams for sure. And I think LSU is going to have a huge argument for getting back to Atlanta with a little bit more of a deserved appearance than they had last year. I think LSU, you know, they return Jaden Daniels. And I think Gerald that he's
on defense.
Yeah. They've got a roster. Brian Kelly is doing a good job so far. I've talked about him on the show before, and now he's kind of got to prove himself that, you know, it's not like you come in and you take over a roster and you do it for 1 year and you can be good. It's now you got to come in and show that you can sustain success. And I do think that this is a year for him to be able to prove that. I think this is a year that they can dominate overall, and they can look pretty good and then get where they're supposed to be at the end of the year. And that's with the opportunity to play in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, I honestly was not a believer in Brian Kelly when the announcement came that he was moving on from Notre Dame and he was going to come to LSU. He was going to be a head coach in SEC. He was going to be in the same division as Nick Saban in Alabama. I was like, this is not going to go well. I don't think Brian Kelly is built to last in the SEC. I don't think he is built to have success in the SEC. I thought Notre Dame was a perfect spot for him. You're not really tied to any conference or anything, and you're already having a lot of success, but maybe all of this conference realignment, people jumping ship and making these mega conferences, if you will, here in the near future, maybe that kind of gave him some cold feet. Was like, well, I better get somewhere that is going to be in one of these powerhouse conferences. And so, but yeah, I mean, he obviously had a really good season last year. I thought he played Georgia a lot better than I expected LSU to in the SEC championship game, even though Georgia still hung 50 points on their head. I thought they still played fairly well. I thought they definitely played high to a higher standard than I thought they would. I thought that would just be a blowout from the jump, but I thought Jaden Daniels and the backup Nussheimer, I believe is his last name. I can't remember, but I thought he played really well too. So shout out to the LSU Tigers for doing that in the first year. But yeah, year two is a big one for Brian Kelly and LSU to see if they can sustain that success. Can you do it twice? Can you beat Nick Saban twice, 2 years in a row? And can you get back to Atlanta 2 years in a row? If you can, then all right, you have our attention officially. You are officially on watch for being in contention for college football playoff every single year. And of course, on watch for an SEC championship every year. Especially, I almost picked LSU. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Especially now when you consider that after this year, right, that they go to a 12-team playoff system. And so that, like, if you're a decent team in the SEC, like, you now have such a big advantage. We've talked about that several times with Georgia. It's like, I don't see after this year, Georgia's going to have like a guaranteed ticket into the SEC or into the playoffs every year as a 12-team playoff system. And so teams like LSU that can now, like in that case, afford to lose to a Bama, right? Or lose another game out there. Even two losses potentially could still be able to get in. When you add that into it, LSU is going to be able to be competitive with Brian Kelly very quickly at LSU. And I think this year, even with still having a 14 playoff, I'm not saying they're making the playoffs, but I'm saying they're going to be able to be a good competitive team in the SEC. And if they are, that gives them the opportunity to try to get a bid to the playoffs again this year.
Yeah, I almost picked LSU for the team I was hot about, but I'm glad I didn't since you picked them. So now I get to go in a different direction, and I'm going to stick in the Western Division, and I'm not picking Alabama. I'm picking Ole Miss. And the reason why I'm going to pick Ole Miss is because I took a look at their schedule, and I think it's a pretty favorable schedule, to be honest. They have to go at Alabama, but they have LSU at home. They have Arkansas at home. They have Texas A&M at home. And but they do have to go at Georgia, and they also have to go at Auburn. So some tough road games in the mix, but I also think that this is a good year for maybe Ole Miss to start making some waves under Lane Kiffin, because Judkins, phenomenal running back, yeah, arguably the best running back in the SEC. I think he's great. They have Jackson Dart and they have Spencer Sanders. on roster, which I don't know why they took both. They have both of those guys on the roster, but here we are. They have two great options at quarterback. I think the biggest thing that everybody's been kind of waiting on is for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss to start figuring things out on defense, because yeah, we know you can score points. We know you get all the bells and whistles on offense. We know what you can do on offense, Lane Kiffin. But if you are going to make a run to go to Atlanta in December, you've got to have some work in the trenches on defense. You got to be able to get the other offense off of the field, and you got to be able to get three and outs, or you got to have a sustainable defense, a team that can at least push back just a little bit. But that has not been the case for the Rebels. They haven't had much of a defense at all yet under Lane Kiffin. But I think this year, especially with Alabama having some quarterback concerns like Zach is talking about in the comments, is it going to be Tyler Buckner? Is it going to be Jalen Milroe? We don't know yet. What is Alabama going to look like this year? LSU is probably going to be good again this year, but they also lost some key pieces like Kayshawn Boutte and BJ Ojulari. They lost some key contributors from a season ago as well. So while they are going to be good, they did lose some key contributors. And so I just think Ole Miss, I think this could be a year where maybe they do finish second in the West. So I'm kind of hot about Ole Miss, and I am hot about Lane Kiffin this year. I don't think that they're going to go into either Alabama or Georgia and pull out victories, but I think a 10-2 season is good enough to finish second in the West probably. So I'm hot about the Rebels this year, Stoddard.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that either. And you hit the two things that would be worried about on their schedules. They go into Athens, they go into Tuscaloosa, but two losses, once again, doesn't mean that you're out of the SEC West conversation this year, in my opinion, because like you just detailed and what was in the comments, Bama, I'm not saying Bama's going to be out there going 12-0 when I say that I think it's between LSU and Bama.
Their floor is probably 10-2 for Bama,
yeah,
right?
So I think so. So if that's the case, right, like if their floor is 10-2 and, you know, LSU, maybe their ceiling, or not LSU, Ole Miss, maybe their ceiling is 10-2, then they're competing for that top spot. And if not, at least maybe the second spot, because it is going to be coming between those three teams for sure. Lane Kiffin's been there for a while. He does a decent job recruiting. He's got, like you named the players there. They've got a good roster. It'll be interesting to see what they can put together. Like you said as well, as soon as they figure out defense, man, if he could ever get himself a really good defensive-minded coach.
You know, it doesn't have to be top 10. Like, I'm talking like top 35. 50.
I'd say top 50 almost. Like, I mean, if he could do something like that, yeah, I think he could actually be successful. But defense is important, even in today's game. We've proven that at Georgia. And so you've seen it by teams like him that score 40 plus points a game every year and still don't win anything because they cannot play defense because they allow 45 points a game or something stupid. But it's one of those things that the SEC West is definitely up in the air this year. I think that's not something that anyone's going into with confidence that one particular team will win that conference. I think it could go between two, maybe three teams. You're going a little bit higher.
Three teams that we mentioned, probably.
If it's three teams, it's the three teams we mentioned. I don't see anybody else coming out of the woodworks to challenge those three teams for a top spot.
Yeah, and here my dad is asking a question about my own take. Has Lane had a signature win at Ole Miss? Honestly, I can't think of one, and I don't think that he has. And so maybe this is the year that Lane finally gets that signature win. If he is able to beat LSU at home, or if he is able to knock off an Alabama on the road, or heck, even if he does, maybe he gets Georgia's number in Athens this year, then he has an opportunity to get his signature win this year. And that's what it would take, obviously, for him to be in that conversation of being in the upper tier of the Western Division. So maybe it'll happen this year, but no, I don't think he does have a signature win at Ole Miss yet. People have been waiting for it. People thought it was going to be against Alabama last year because it was at Oxford and things were kind of going for Lane Kiffin's way.
Get your popcorn
ready. And then he said, get your popcorn ready. And Nick Saban, like, hold my beer. And yeah, lights turned out. Game was over in the first 5 minutes of that football game. I mean, it wasn't even close. So maybe Lane Kiffin can get his squad straightened out this year and he can get some things rolling for him. I'll go ahead and tell you the team that I'm not hot about this year. I think this might come as a bit of a shock to some people, and I kind of hate to do it because I really do have a lot of good things to say about this coach. I think he's done a tremendous job at where he is. I think he has elevated that program. You know, when you consider where they were 6 years ago, I think he absolutely has done that job. And I think he has put that program in a better spot. But when you look at what is ahead of them in 2023, what they have on the roster and how that program typically fares in situations like these, I just have to say that I'm not too hot about the Arkansas Razorbacks, Stoddard. I'm not hot about Sam Pittman and how their season is going to go this year. Like I said, I love Sam Pittman. I think I don't think anybody would say that Sam Pittman has underachieved in Arkansas or has done a poor job at Arkansas. No. That team hadn't won an SEC game in what, two straight seasons or something like that when he arrived. And then he went out there and won at came close to winning 10 games. Like, he has done a good job in Arkansas. I think fans out in Little Rock are more than content with what Sam Pittman has done out there, what the Pit Boss is cooking up over there in Arkansas. But just take a look at the schedule. This starts off fine. It's Western Carolina, Kent State, BYU, all wins. Those are all games you will win. You should start the season 3-0. And then you go at LSU. And then you play Texas A&M at home. And then you go at Ole Miss. And then you go at Alabama. Whew. That's a tough four-game stretch right there. When you're just getting into the start of your SEC schedule, when you're just now jumping into the grind after playing BYU and two cupcake games at the beginning of the year, man, it's tough to switch gears that quickly. I know they return KJ Jefferson, and I love KJ Jefferson. I think he's a great SEC quarterback. He is a good college quarterback. He gets the job done for those Razorbacks over there out in the West. But that's a gruesome schedule to go through. And they have to go at Florida this year as well. They have Auburn at home, but it's just a hard schedule. It's a tough schedule. And I just don't see Arkansas faring well against those matchups, especially some of those road games that they have. So I see kind of a down year for the Pit Boss and the Razorbacks over there. I'm just not too hot about Arkansas this year.
Well, and to go back to the stretch of the schedule that you just mentioned right there, I think you're happy to go 2-2 in that, right? I think there's I think there's no reason they shouldn't be able to beat Texas A&M, because they should definitely be able to beat Texas A&M. But if you can take one against LSU, or you can take one against Ole Miss, or even Alabama in that four-game stretch, you walk away happy, and you look at your schedule afterwards, because think about how tough that part is right there. After that, it's not that bad. You lose two of those games, you can still go 10-2.
You could.
I'm just saying they could.
If you upset LSU, that's a dub. That's a dub for Arkansas already. If you can go ahead and pull off a game like that, you can pull off an upset like that, that's a dub season already. You get a big win like that in 2023 with the schedule that you were dealt with, that's a dub. That's a win for Arkansas, but I just don't see that happening.
No, I don't necessarily see that happening either. I think their best chance, if they were in that stretch, to take one that's not Texas A&M, I think their best chance is to take one against Ole Miss. I think that's their best opportunity. Bama's going to be a tough one. LSU's going to be a really, really tough one for them as well. And I'm not saying they will go 10-2. I'm saying that if they can walk out of there with one of those wins out of those three games, it's possible, because that means they are a real team this year still. That means they are capable of winning those big games, those tough games. I think that, you know, if they don't go 10-2 at that point, they would go, you know, maybe 9 wins, maybe 8 wins or something like that. I don't think he's going to have a bad season. I just don't think he's going to be in contention for the SEC West title.
Oh, no. No. But I don't think Arkansas fans are looking to be for the Western title. Like I said, you win 9 games. Claps all around for you, man. That's what
this dude, like you just said, came off of not winning an SEC game for what, 2 seasons, and then came into Athens late in the year in a top 10 matchup. That was impressive. I mean, I know they fell off after that for a while, but they came in as a top 10 matchup mid-season, which is extremely impressive. And I think that's something that should be celebrated if you are an Arkansas fan.
All right, give me, what team are you not hot about starting? Also, by the way, King of the Hill coming right after we listen to see which team Stoddard is not hot about.
My team that I'm not hot about is going to be Kentucky. I feel like they've been right towards the top of the SEC East for a little while, for the past four years or so. You know, where they, at one point there was a game, if they beat Georgia, they won the SEC East, and Georgia beat the crap out of them and moved on. Since then, they've kind of gone a little bit down, but, you know, they've been in the top three, top four teams in the SEC East for a while. And I just think it's one of those games that, or one of those teams this year that now you don't have Will Levis, who was talked about for a while as possibly being a top five pick, and then ended up going right into the early, early part of the second round. So you had a guy that was right there on the verge of it. And now they've got a guy, I want to say his name is like Devin Leary or something like
Devin
that.
Devin Leary from Devin transferred Leary. In from NC State.
That's right. And I don't know that he's going to be able to do what even Will Levis was able to do. And if Will Levis wasn't able to do it, I don't see anything else on that program or that roster that's really built up or changed. And then now they've got a more competitive Tennessee, a more competitive South Carolina to play, a extremely competitive Georgia to play. I just don't think that – I think they're going to – winning eight games for them this year would be a really good thing for them.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Kentucky and kind of what Mark Stoops has already figured out is – that's a program that you're going to have to fuel from the transfer portal a good bit. And they did that by getting Will Levis from Penn State. That was a great addition to the roster, and it brought a lot of success for the program. And it kind of, in a sense, put them on the map a little bit. You know, when Will Levis is in the headlines consistently leading up to the NFL draft as a quarterback, kind of puts your name out there. It gets people saying, oh, dang, Kentucky had a potential first-round draft pick at quarterback last year. What? Mark Stoops is like that over there? Maybe Kentucky ain't so bad after all. But yeah, but that also means you're just kind of your program is going to be what the transfer portal offers you. And this year it offered you Devin Leary, who isn't a bad quarterback by any means. NC State has some really successful years with him at quarterback. But I also, yeah, like you said, I think your best chance was when you had a guy like Will Levis, who everybody said was a potential first round draft pick, and he didn't live up to the hype. And now you're transitioning, switching gears to Devin Leary. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think that Kentucky is by any means going to drop down to the bottom of the barrel in the East. I think they're I think they're still very much so a top four, top three team in the division. But compared to where they have been in years prior, I think you're absolutely right. I think this is going to be somewhat of a drop back from Kentucky, especially because Georgia is still Georgia. Tennessee looks to be still kind of climbing up the ranks a little bit, trying to improve that roster. And Kentucky just hasn't quite pushed through that threshold yet. They haven't quite gotten to that next level of what it takes to play for a game in Atlanta. So I think you're absolutely right. Interesting, though, that you pick Kentucky. I didn't know where you were going, but Kentucky did not cross my mind. So interesting.
You know, I didn't want to take the low hanging fruit to say like Texas A&M, because like, I feel like that's
just... if you came in here and you picked Vanderbilt, I was going to slap you through my computer screen. I was like, that is such a cop out.
So I would actually do that. I would buy Vanderbilt before I would sell Vanderbilt right now, because I do think that this is kind of off the pick, but like, I think that Vanderbilt's trending in the right direction more so than teams like Kentucky. I think Kentucky's trending backwards while Vanderbilt may be at the bottom, but they're still at least trending upward. And Texas A&M, I still think they're trending back, or maybe they've, you know, sat in the middle or whatever, that kind of thing. So I wanted to go with a team that I felt was actually trending backwards when I made this pick, rather than, and I feel like going for a team that had been on the top recently is a better pick for this type of segment. So no chance I was going to go with, you know, Vanderbilt or even like Florida, because I think that's also low hanging fruit, shots fired there too. But you can't go with the low hanging fruit in this type of segment.
Oh man, who would have thought that Florida fans did not see that coming in the next 3 years. Man, coming off of a trip to Atlanta against Alabama in 2020, if you would have told them in 2023, people would call you low-hanging fruit in regard to a conversation of a team you are not hot about in the SEC. They would not have seen that one coming. So, man, Stoddard's always got to get his digs into those SEC rivals, always.
Can't help.
All right. Dan has been begging for it in the comment section, and I've been wanting to find a good topic to bring this segment back. King of the Hill. I've been wanting to, because I didn't want to come in here and be like, all right, Stoddard, tell me your top five cereals. That is not how I wanted to reintroduce this segment this offseason. I wanted a legit conversation that was going to get the ball rolling, maybe even get us butting heads a little bit. I don't know that we are going to get this in this conversation,
okay. But
I think we are going to get a good dialogue from both of us, kind of bouncing ideas off one another, just kind of seeing how you stack this up, because you know, everybody loves a good rankings. Everybody loves talking rankings, like who's one, who's two
rankings
in any topic whatsoever. It doesn't matter. It could be food, it could be cars, whatever floats your boat. People love ranking things, and we're sticking with football. We're sticking with sports. We're not going to give you a curveball or anything like that. I'm just going to simply ask you, is Brock Bowers the best player in college football?
The best overall
player? The best player amongst every player in the entire country playing college football today. Is Brock Bowers one on that list?
That's a real tough question to dissect, because there's so many levels of it. We're not just like, obviously he's the best tight end that's in college
football. He's without a doubt a top 10 player in the country, easily, probably top five, without a doubt, a top five player. Is he the number one player in the country, though?
Are we going based on value or are we going just strictly?
No. Do not think about the NFL draft. Don't think like that. I want you saying, thinking of it like this, amongst any college football player, if you got to pick one player, or like if you had to choose the best player at his position or the best player, who is the most talented player in college football, who are you picking? And is it Brock Bowers?
I think there's a huge argument for Brock Bowers in that conversation. I feel like he's just his athleticism along with his speed and his versatility in the game that he can play, right? Like he's not just going to go out there and catch a bunch of passes. He can get on the end of the line and he can block very well for you. So his versatility plays a huge factor there. He's going to run like a 4.5 guaranteed, maybe even a 4.4 at the combine when he actually goes to show his athleticism. And I'm sure he's going to bench 22 times on the 225 or something like that as well. So, I mean, as far as like a raw athlete goes, I think there's a really good argument. I that's kind of hard to give an official answer because I'd have to really look at more of the, you know, kind of dissect more of the players that are out there to really give a better answer. But I think that I could make an argument personally for Brock Bowers of being that player.
All right. You want me to, I'll tell you how I went about this because this was a topic I actually discussed in the Discord today. And I'll tell you how I originally answered it without even thinking twice. I instantly replied and said, Caleb Williams, number one, but Brock Bowers is without a doubt number two. And I went on to list all these reasons why Brock Bowers is without a doubt number two. And it was really consistent of who the top three choices were. Caleb Williams, Brock Bowers, Marvin Harrison. Those were the top three players that people consistently said are the top three players in college football. And I don't think anybody would argue against that. I think those are the top three players in college football, probably. And so I said, Caleb Williams is number one and Brock Bowers is number two. But then in my reasoning why Brock Bowers is number two, I went on to say, Brock Bowers is doing things at his position that nobody has done in 50 years. And Brock Bowers is setting records on a consistent basis. Brock Bowers has a chance to be a back-to-back Mackey Award winner for the first time in award history. Probably should have already had it. There was an argument for him to have already won it his freshman year. He's going to be a three-time All-American by the time his college career is over with. He might even be the first 1,000-yard passer in Georgia history, aside from Terrence Edwards in the early 2000s. And so when I laid it out like that, I was like, I just said that Brock Bowers is doing things that nobody at his position has done in 50 years. Yeah. I can't say that about Caleb Williams. Name me any other tight end that is taking the end around 75 yards for a touchdown. Nobody.
Not even Kyle Pitts did that.
Nobody. Brock Bowers is a one of one at his position. And so after saying that, I recanted my statement. I said, you know what? Brock Bowers is the best player in the country. When you lay it out like that, when you look at his stat books, you don't even have to look at the numbers really. You just have to understand the fact that he is doing things that nobody has seen at this position and that he is the probably the most dominant offensive player in the country. When you put it out like that, I was like, yeah, Brock Bowers is the best player in the country. Because look, and that's not to say that Caleb Williams isn't what he is being advertised.
He's great.
He has an elite arm. He can make any throw that you want him to. He fits perfectly in Lincoln Riley's offense. He is going to be the future number one overall draft pick. Yes, Caleb Williams is all of those things. But when you also look at it through this perspective of, we've kind of seen a Caleb Williams before in college football. We've kind of seen that story before. There's not very many of them, or it's not many. There is not very many people that can play to the level of Caleb Williams from a quarterback standpoint.
If you look over the past 15 years, we've seen several of them, though.
Have you seen several Brock Bowers over the last 15 years?
No. That's why when you asked me the question, that's why my first question to you was, are we going off of like most valuable? Are we going off of like strictly
because
skill?
Because off of value, that's probably Caleb Williams.
It's Caleb Williams. That was exactly what I was going to say. That if we're going off of value, then yeah, I'm going to go with your quarterback. And that's because that's kind of a given. But when you even bring up like Marvin Harrison Jr., think about wide receivers. Every single year we have a Marvin Harrison Jr.
We see wide receivers like that. We've seen Devontae Smith, you know. We've seen Justin Jefferson. We've seen Ja'Marr Chase. We've seen those guys before. Now, again, that's not to say that Marvin Harrison is not one of those dudes because
he's deserving of a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. Like he's going to be, you know, Caleb Williams is going to be number one. Marvin Harris Jr. is going to be somewhere, maybe even top 10. It depends on where they go after wide receivers. That's always the question with the draft. It just depends on where they go with the, I think top 10 is a very valid area for him to be. I think top 10 is a very valid area for Brock Bowers to be, as long as there's some value there. But I think what happens is he becomes the generational player. Caleb Williams is not a generational player. Marvin Harris Jr. is not a generational player. That's why Brock Bowers, I think, gets the edge there. And I think, like I said earlier, you can make the argument for him being the best player in college football because he is a generational player. He's doing stuff, like you said a second ago, people haven't done in 50 plus years. It's just, it's insane what he's doing. So I think, yeah, after the conversation, I was on the verge of it, but I almost felt like you were baiting me into saying it. And so you could come.
Man, I wanted your reaction. I wanted you to officially say how you would rank them, because that's how I wanted this conversation to go. But you kept beating around the bush a little bit. And I could tell you were just wrestling in your mind like,
I was thinking about it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard. And that's why, like, the first thing I had to ask you was, are we going off of value? Because, like, but even going off of value, I still put him at number two. If we're going off of value alone, I'm going Caleb Williams, I'm going Brock Bowers, and then I'm going Marvin Harris Jr. Because a wide receiver is, you can get another one just like him next year. Quarterback, tell me I'm wrong. Can you not get another wide receiver that can Jeremiah do pretty Smith much everything?
Exists. That's because that's why he exists.
But that's my point. That's the point, though. They're always there. Wide receivers, you're always going to every draft class, you've got a wide receiver that can do that.
If I was one of these sneaky media outlets, I would have clipped the part where you said Caleb Williams is not a generational player. Marvin Harrison Jr. is not a generational player. Clip it. Tweet it and let people feast on you. Tag Jeremiah Stoddard says this about Marvin Harrison and Caleb Williams. No, I know exactly what you're saying, but of course, you know.
The point of it is next year you can get a wide receiver that can do, you know, the same stuff that Marvin Harris Jr. can do. The reason, that's why I put him third on the list if I'm going off of the value side of it, or even just off of, you know, the original question in general. If you're going off value, you can't necessarily get a Caleb Williams next year in the draft. And so you might have to wait a couple of years. We see that every once in a while. Like even this year that we just had, you had, you know, CJ Stroud and a couple guys that were decent. But then you had people reaching for Anthony Richardson. You had a conversation of Will Levis being in a top five pick or even a third pick or even at one point number one overall. And that's something like, if those are the conversations, I'm saying you want to punt on the quarterback. I'll take CJ Stroud every single time. I would have taken him. He's the only quarterback that I would have taken in the top five this year. But my point is, you don't necessarily have a quarterback every single year to take. You always got a wide receiver to take every single year. You dang sure don't always have a tight end to take every year that are doing what they do. You had Kyle Pitts, that was the highest ever drafted tight end. And then luckily for you and me, and everybody else that's watching college football, we happen to get another generational talent tight end right behind him 2 years later. Yeah. That's the crazy part, because they are generational talents, but they're in the same generation. But they're both just, they're so much better than everybody else that plays that position in college football right now.
Yeah, and I think it's too, like, you know, Travis Kelce is the standard for tight ends nowadays. Like, he is the golden child of modern day tight ends. That is who everybody is measured up to. Are you Travis Kelce? Well, and then when you say that, and then you look at what Travis Kelce did in college, and then you compare it to what Brock Bowers is doing in college, and the fact that he hasn't even started his NFL career yet, but he will in a year.
Yeah.
Then it's like, he's in that conversation, and he will be in 5 years. We will be talking about Brock Bowers as the measuring stick of tight ends. And I don't know if we'll be saying Caleb Williams is the measuring stick of quarterbacks or, you know, whatsoever. So I thought it was an interesting question. I wrestled with it a lot more than I thought I would. And so I thought it was a great way to bring back King of the Hill for this. I thought it was a great conversation. I love getting your take on that. And so there you go. King of the Hill is back. Dan, I hope you're happy, because you've been in the comments asking for it to make a comeback. And so it finally did. We gave you a good one. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And before you head on out, before you hit that X button, go ahead and like and subscribe for us if you haven't already. Both of those things, just two simple clicks, those two small actions help us so much, help this channel grow so much. And so if you could just do those two things before you leave, that would be great. We would love the support. And then, of course, he's going to drop the handles, and there they are. Go follow us on Twitter. Stay up to date. Like today, you would have found out that there was a late edition of King of the Hill 5 minutes before the episode went live. That's when we added King of the Hill. That's how late of an edition that was. And you would have known that if you were on Twitter and you were following either of those three accounts, but you should follow all three because all three are great accounts. But anyways, that is going to do it for this week. We will not be doing an episode next week because I will be in Nashville for SEC Media Days. So we're going to take next week off, but then we will be right back with you talking about everything that was said in Nashville from every single SEC head coach, or if they're not every SEC head coach, but all of the prime quotes that we want to talk about. Those will certainly be discussed on this channel. So go ahead. Like I said, hit that subscribe button so you do not miss that episode. And Stoddard, you can close us out.
Yeah, Jonathan's going to go out there and he's going to come back with Kirby Smart's new mantra for the team. You know, last year it was we will not be hunted at the University of Georgia. So I'm excited to see what he does this year while he's going for a three-peat. But as always, guys, keep it classy in the Classic City, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime,
to the Sports, which express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.